I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And welcome to the Second Tier Podcast. I'm Ryan Dilks, and I'm joined by the Ian Foster to my Stephen Schumacher. It's Justin Peach.
Good day to you, Ryan.
Oh, Justin. It is a pleasure to be speaking to you today. I hope you had a wonderful Easter weekend. I have got a question for you to kick things off.
Wow.
Would you class yourself as a man? Perhaps even you'd class yourself as a real man's man.
Is that a question or a statement? Because it feels like it's loaded a little bit.
Just would you class yourself as a man?
Yes.
Not a man.
All right. I wouldn't.
Okay, fine. Well, the only reason I ask is, assuming that you did think yourself as a bit of a man, would you agree with me that one of the most enjoyable things you can do as a man is going to the tip? Because I went yesterday and I thought to myself, I'm really looking forward to spending the whole day sat on the sofa watching Championship football, but you know what would make this day even better? A quick trip to the tip, you know, to just launch a printer into a skip. Do you get what I'm saying, Justin?
No, absolutely. The absolute satisfaction when something breaks apart as soon as it makes contact with something else in one of those giant bin boxes at the tip is the most satisfying thing, I think.
Oh, Justin, let me stop you right there. I had a drawer which I lobbed into a skip. Mm-hmm. And it got impaled on an upright plank of wood. Honestly, it was one of the greatest thrills I'll have all year.
Yeah, and the annoying and sad thing is you can only have a certain amount of tip runs a year, because there's only a certain things you could afford to literally throw and it destroy itself as soon as it makes contact with something else. There's just not enough of that in a house, unless you're clearing out a house.
Yeah. What's the greatest thrill you get from throwing an item into a tip?
I think it's just seeing it literally just fold itself. Like when I removed my kitchen a couple of years ago, I threw a cupboard in and it just split into all four pieces.
Ooh, and it's like, that's satisfying. Well,
it's gone back to its original, apart from it being a tree, it's gone back to its original form.
That's a very good point. It'd be very impressive if it did turn into a tree when you throw it into a skip. Welcome to the No More Championship Podcast, the Second Tier. Thank you for joining us wherever you are. Yeah, I mean, what a weekend. What a weekend of Easter action we have just had. And Easter Monday was probably somehow topping Good Friday, you might say, because some of the action we got was marvellous. So we'll talk about all of the action from Easter Monday. Of course, all three of the top three won, which keeps things interesting right at the top. We've also got the promotion race where all the teams chasing sixth lost. So that was kept interesting as well. And then the relegation battle as well. And what's happened at Plymouth Argyle with Ian Foster finally being relieved of his duties there. So we'll talk about that in part two of the show, but plenty for us to get our teeth into from Easter Monday here in the Championship. And we'll kick things off with probably the game of the Easter weekend. Ipswich Town remain top of the league. It's after a dramatic 3-2 win against Southampton. They were 2-1 down, but then they got one back. They kept pushing and pushing for a third. Looked like it perhaps wouldn't come in time. And then the 97th minute, Jeremy Sarmiento toe pokes it past Gavin Bazunu in the Southampton goal. What a game, Justin.
Honestly, unreal. Honestly, it was fantastic. I don't want Ipswich to get promoted. I'm going to throw that right there.
Wow,
I don't want Ipswich to get promoted.
Just throwing that in straight away.
Yeah, just diving straight in 2 feet. I'm not messing about. The reason why I'm saying it now is purely for the value they give the neutral, week by week, game by game. It's incredible. It's so unique to have a team who do this so often. It's not healthy, but it's so unique. So the whole reason why I don't want Ipswich to get promoted is because I want to keep seeing this. I don't want it to go away. It's just absolutely unreal. And I don't think you've got... I don't think we've had a team as relentless as Ipswich are in terms of pushing for results, because they just keep you on the edge of the seat for the entire 90 minutes plus. I mean, Southampton did their very best as well in this game, but you know, two attacking teams going at it, it's what you want on a bank holiday Monday.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was gripped throughout this game. Put it this way, considering the showpiece game in the Premier League over Easter was an incredibly drab 0-0, the Championship's showpiece game of the weekend really put that to shame. It was just thrilling, the back and forth of momentum throughout the game, loads of little subplots of players having these individual battles. It's got to be said, I'm not sure how Sam Morsy avoided a second yellow, because he seemed to do his utmost best to try and get sent off in this one. And then the straight red for James Bree as well. I'm not totally sure it was a red, but that's by the by. The thing is, Southampton were much the better team for the majority of the game, and then Ipswich just turned the screw, and the limbs, oh, just in the limbs when Sarmiento scored, were simply marvellous, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. They were. I mean, we've seen it so many times now already. The standard of limbs at Portman Road are just unreal. But that they were special. I also heard some of the local commentary from the BBC radio stations, and it was just pure passion, just oozing out. And you can imagine what the fans were feeling when Sarmiento's really unorthodox finish. Because the ball,
how did he get up so quickly, Justin?
Yeah.
How did he get up so quickly? He was on the floor and it looked like the chance had gone.
Exactly, exactly. It's just the ball was literally under him, and he, you know, he gets up and he pokes it, and the ball moves in slowly. It was just drama at its absolute highest. Unreal.
Yeah, he managed to defy gravity in that very moment and get back on his feet. It was remarkable. But what a moment, and big bag of cliches time. What an advert for the Championship, because it was such a good game. And it's another win for Ipswich Town, who remain top of the Championship with 6 games remaining. The Ipswich are going up tractor. It's now like the DeLorean at the end of Back to the Future 1, where it's just flying. And it, you know, it doesn't need wheels anymore at this stage, Justin. In all seriousness, though, when Ipswich are winning games like that, in that manner, does even someone like you, an Ipswich sceptic, start to think that Ipswich are almost destined for promotion?
I think destiny is almost discrediting the work that Kieran McKenna does, but you are right. If you're going to believe the aura surrounding these moments that they keep plugging away for themselves, yeah, it's hard to disagree with the notion that destiny is pushing them towards promotion. You score this many late winners so late in games, you show a certain amount of stubbornness, you show resilience, you show the middle finger to those who say you can't keep doing it.
Like
somebody else on this podcast. And it's just, yeah, it's got to be destiny. And I think in addition, and it's really important, I think it shows the importance of the depth they've got in their team in terms of the quality. Sarmiento said he was disappointed not to start the game, but he knew he would get a chance coming off the bench. And boy, did he. That's a team. That is a team right there. And that is the thing that's putting him through. Not destiny. None of this hoodoo. Okay? It is depth. It is teamwork. It is grit. That is what's doing it for Ipswich.
Yeah, well, sometimes a club's destiny just seems to be written in the stars. And when you have got things like Jeremy Sarmiento toe-pegging it in the 97th minute against Southampton, and Vaclav Hladký pulling off that ridiculous save after being caught in possession against Blackburn, Ipswich will definitely feel like destiny is on their side. Just kind of going off the back of what you were saying, Justin, please don't for a second think that I'm saying their potential promotion is down to luck. And I know Leeds and Leicester fans have frequently been labelling Ipswich as lucky on social media over the past few weeks. But you don't win as many games as them and lose as few as them by being lucky. You do it by being well-drilled, working extremely hard on the training ground, recruiting really well, and having a top manager. And that's what Ipswich have done. This isn't luck. They have earned this. And they deserve to be top of the league, because aside from a dip around the new year, they've been absolutely sublime. And as far as promotion is concerned, it's looking like it may very well actually be happening. It's becoming more, it's, at this stage, you'd probably say it's more likely than not likely. I mean, the next game is the East Anglian Derby on Saturday, which is, of course, a tricky game, particularly with Norwich's form in 2024. Then after that, they've got Watford, who look rejuvenated under Tom Cleverley. Middlesbrough after that can be great, can be poor, so who knows. Hull and Coventry after that, both chasing the top six. And then Huddersfield on the final day, who have been shocking recently, but are fighting to stay up. Still a lot of work to do, Justin, but mostly games Ipswich Town should be winning.
I think it's a nice run of fixtures, because I think if you take in the context of playing Middlesbrough and Hull at the time that they'll be playing them, they'll be out of the playoff race, you'd expect. I mean, Hull are looking unlikely now, so I think it's a really nice run of fixtures for Ipswich. And as you say, I think another thing you need to point out is they're Ipswich are a super fit team. To be able to go for as long as they have and as consistently as they have, I think, yeah, you've got to be a super, super fit team as well. So that's more credit there for Ipswich. But that run of games that they've got, I think is, I think it's actually quite healthy. I know the Norwich one's a bit, ooh, okay. But then again, they lost quite convincingly against Leicester. So maybe that's coming off the gas for David Wagner's side. And, you know, Ipswich, as soon as Ipswich smell blood, they go, don't they? They are a foxhound, so to speak.
Yeah, not sure about foxhound, but you are right. They compare Ipswich's fixtures to Leeds and Leicester. Both of them have still got to play Southampton, and then Leicester have still got to play West Brom as well. So maybe you will be looking at and saying Ipswich have probably got the more favourable fixtures. If they come out of the Norwich game smelling of roses still, then it's hard to deny that they will get promoted at that stage. It's got to be said. So it's looking very, very good from an Ipswich Town perspective. And let's touch on Southampton, because in fairness to them, they did play really well for large parts of this, and it did feel a bit harsh for them not to get something. Heading into the game, they still had an outside chance of automatic promotion, but that's over now, isn't it, Justin? It's going to be the playoffs for Russell Martin's side, isn't it?
It's 11. They're 11 points off Leicester at the moment, and Leicester are the team that are looking a little bit. I know they've got two games in hand on both Ipswich and Leeds, but it's just difficult to see them pushing into the top two. I say it's 11 points off Leicester. Leicester are third, 12 points off Leeds, so it's a slightly even bigger gap. And I think
games
as well,
in hand though, haven't they? But still,
yeah. But you know, they halve it to 6 points, and you get to that stage of the season where it's okay. Are these teams going to drop that many points? They're going to lose two on the bounce to allow Southampton back in. If they do, then you know, Southampton need to take the onus and go for it, but I don't think they're quite there yet. I don't know why. They just seem like a team that just a millimetres off where they need to be at the moment, and that's it's frustrating, but it's probably to be expected because it's a complex style of play under Russell Martin. It's his first season in charge of the Saints, and it's a relatively young team in places as well.
Yeah, well, it's a bit mad, really, that a side who went 22 games unbeaten are out of contention for automatic promotion with 6 or 7 games remaining. Because, unfortunately, their early form and then their form in February has cost them. I mean, I say it like that, it's not a lot, but the sheer standard of the top four this season means that's all it takes. In a normal season, Southampton probably wouldn't be far off the top two, but this is a pretty extraordinary season. So they're set for the playoffs, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I'd say it's better than missing out on the final day, because it means you can prepare appropriately and mentally for what's ahead, can't you? And as it stands, they'll probably end up facing West Brom, which is a juicy one, a contrast in styles. And I'm sure we'll focus more on that when we have to cross that bridge, Justin. But I suppose, you know, one final thing I'll say is, I told you Southampton were destined to finish fourth. I was saying it for weeks, and you told me around December time that I was daft for suggesting that. Never doubted it for a sec, Justin.
I don't know why you're coming at me here, but yeah, you were saying it in the midst of an unbeaten run. It's very hard to say that a team's destined to finish fourth despite being unbeaten for a large portion of the season, or the largest portion of the season at that point. So, you know, get on your high horse and get rid, man. No one needs it. No one needs that today.
Yeah. Well, it always just seemed to me like Southampton weren't as good as Ipswich, Leeds and Leicester. And while at one point it did look like Southampton may be well in the midst of the automatic promotion race, you know, time has come to pass that they just weren't as good as Leeds, Leicester and Ipswich. Let's go on to Leeds. They scored twice late on to beat Hull 3-1. It sees them stay second. quite a lot to take in from this game. We'll start with Leeds' performance, because for the second game in a row, wasn't a brilliant one, was it? But they got the job done, Justin, eventually.
I don't know what you expect at this stage of the season. I don't mind that. Injuries take hold, fatigue sets in. It's a lot to ask a team to be 100% all the time. I was reading sort of some of the post-game stuff. Glenn Kamara was playing through illness. Joe Rodon was having back spasms. Sam Byram said at halftime he couldn't run anymore. Daniel Farke is going to be buzzing with that. I think I'm buzzing with that, because if you win when so many things are up against you like that, I think it means a little bit more. And you win when you're not playing particularly well either, again, it just means a little bit more, and it means you're going in the right direction. And I'll keep saying it, I'll keep banging that drum. I think I said it in the previous episode, good teams win poorly, and Leeds weren't at their vintage best, but they won, they got the job done, they're getting it done, and that's exactly what good championship winning teams do. When you have a bad day, they make sure they take something home. We can't say that about Leicester. We can't say that about Southampton. Sometimes even Ipswich, although the outlier at the moment is saying they are doing that. So, yeah, they will hit the stride again. They just need a couple of days off, a couple of days in a hot bath. They'll be all right.
Yeah. I think the hot bath will do them well, Justin. I think you are right, because early in the season, the problem with Leeds was they were not playing well, and then it would cost them. They'd have this one game in five, wouldn't they, where they just didn't play very well. But now they are getting results. And, I mean, Leeds have done that twice now over Easter, where they were subpar against Watford and subpar against Hull, and they managed to get 4 points out of it, which isn't to be sniffed at, really. I still think it is a bit of a worry that we have seen a dip, because you got to remember before the international break, they were absolutely fantastic.
I think the biggest alarm bell is the fact that they are getting a couple of injuries. I think that's the biggest alarm bell for Leeds, is if they start to lose players at this stage of the season, they can't. They need to inject them with whatever they inject them with before games to get them through them, get them in a hot bath after the game, and get through it, essentially, because there's only a few weeks left this season.
What did you make of Crescencio Somerville taking the penalty off Joel Pirro, Justin? I can say one thing, he's got some bloody bollocks on him, hasn't he?
He has, but I didn't really make much of it. I thought he was absolutely right to take it. Somerville's in form. He's taken penalties, he scored twice this season. Pirro's not scored in 10 games. I think I'd have taken the ball off Joel Pirro at that point. I was like, Joel,
really?
You've not scored in 10 games, mate. I've scored a couple. I'm a happy man. Let me take it. It's a big penalty. Needs a big player in form. And that's me, Justin Peach.
I'm not sure I would have had the same confidence as you, Justin, because when I was watching this unfold, I suddenly started watching through my fingers, because I thought to myself, I've seen this film before. I mean, how many times have we seen it happen over the years where two players have argued over who's taking a penalty for it to then be followed up by the most poorly struck penalty you've ever seen?
But it was a beautiful penalty, because he stroked it down the middle. The balls on Somerville to do that, but also the knowledge, because always go down the middle late in a game. Always go down the middle of the penalty late in the game. Somerville did that. I don't think Joel Pirro would have done that.
Yeah, he managed to withstand the pressure, which is impressive, because doing something like that, taking the ball off someone else for a penalty, just piles the pressure on the taker. And for it to happen that late in such a pivotal game as well, I mean, oh, dear me, I would have loved to have known what Daniel Farke was thinking at the time. But yeah, you're right. Fair play to Somerville. I enjoyed how he didn't even say to Pirro, I'm taking this. He just walked up and picked up the ball. That made me laugh. Could just not find fewer fucks given. Just great stuff from him. Should also give a mention to Dan James, scoring from the halfway line. 96th minute, Ryan Alsop gone up for a Hull corner. I know it was an open goal, Justin, but he still had so much to do. And I think it was a really well-taken goal.
I think it was. They are well-hit shots when you've got to do it, because you're moving at pace, and Dan James really moves at pace. Obviously, it's not as spectacular because he's not chipped the goalkeeper, but that angle, he's at the byline. It's incredibly hard to pull off. As I say, you're running at pace, the ball's bouncing, you have a long way out. You're under pressure from a couple of Hull players as well. Yeah, it's a difficult one. There's a really good fan angle of it, actually, at Leeds, that posted on Twitter. That is worth a quick view.
But it happens so often where a player has an open goal and shoots from that far out and they just make a complete mess of it. But, you know, considering the angle and how far out he is, I actually think he's done really well, because a right footer from that angle, he's got to judge the curl and, you know, fair play to him for being able to hold his nerve, because he could have very easily dragged it wide, and it's probably a lot harder than people will give it credit for. I think it's particularly special when you remember he missed the penalty, which meant Wales missed out on a place at the Euros last week. Yeah. So a small bit of redemption for him with that in mind. But yeah, I think it was a much more difficult goal than people may think at first viewing of it. So Leeds stay second, 1 point behind Ipswich, a point ahead of Leicester, who do have a game in hand. A quick word on Hull, Justin, who are now winless in six. Did play really well against Leeds, probably deserved something from the game and perhaps would have got it if it wasn't for that Regan Slater daft challenge. Their playoff chances weren't too affected by the loss, though, by virtue of the fact that all four teams chasing sixth place lost. Looking at their remaining games, they've got a decent set of fixtures, haven't they? They've now played their most difficult game from the remaining fixtures from the international perspective point of view. They've got Cardiff, Middlesbrough, QPR, Watford, Coventry, Ipswich. That's obviously a difficult game maybe as well. Is at home though. And then Plymouth. So decent set of fixtures to go, isn't there?
Yeah, there is, but they've dropped points against teams that they should be beating, like Birmingham. They've lost to Stoke, obviously, as well. And Preston was a, I wouldn't say a winnable game, but a game they needed to come away with 3 points in. There's just a lot there about Hull that's not convincing me at the moment. I think they're a good possession side, but there's not enough punch. There's not enough, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? There's not enough metal there to really turn these games around. And you know, although they were deserving of at least maybe something from Elland Road, I thought Leeds were probably more deserving of the 3 points, to be honest with you, because I don't think Hull offered a hell of a lot within the game, to be honest. So yeah, there's just something missing, which shouldn't be the case, because they had such a good January. They've got so much attacking talent. It just feels like a missed opportunity this season for Hull, and I can't see myself being convinced by them over the likes of Norwich and Coventry at the moment.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, when you asked the question a couple of months ago, or even just a month ago, who would be the team getting sixth place, I imagine a lot of neutrals would have said Hull based off the January business they did, which was very impressive. But you are right, they've dropped some daft points recently. You can now add Leeds to that collection as well. And it just seems like they are missing something, which is unfortunate. Maybe it is a striker. I know a lot of Hull fans have been conversing recently about who should be starting up front for them. But yeah, it's they haven't maybe taken the step forward in recent weeks that people may have been expecting, which is a shame. But they're still in the race for the top six. It just seems like they haven't got as much momentum as the likes of Coventry and Norwich, have they? Leicester got only their second win in seven league games by beating Norwich 3-1. Whew, and breathe. Got to be said, Leicester looked so nervy in that first 20 minutes, but when Norwich scored, I thought, oh no, it's happening again. And then from that point onwards, Leicester were a much better team. It was almost like the goal made them go, right, let's stop dicking around now. We need to actually just put our foot down and get promoted. And from that point on, they controlled the game. It was attack after attack, and eventually the result came. And boy, did they need it, Justin.
You could see the relief when that Vardy shot went in, actually. I mean, even Maresca displaying as much joy as he did with the goals. I haven't seen maybe that all season. And it's so, so important. As you say, they really did need that. I was speaking to a few Leicester fans before the game, actually, and they were nervous, not only about the game, but the outcome of the season, obviously, with the weight of everything going on behind the scenes. It's such a contrast. So that win against a really good side with a lot of attacking quality as well, that weight really does get lifted, because, as I say, you beat good teams, it gives you confidence, and Norwich are one of the better attacking teams, and they possess some of the better attacking players in the division, and Leicester largely nullified them. And I think that's a big thing as well. They controlled the game. They actually controlled the game, and they allowed their quality to speak for itself. Still maybe a lot to do to generate some momentum, but this is a start, a much needed start.
Yeah, much needed. You could hear the sigh of relief in Norwich, Justin. Leicester were brilliant. It was like watching the Leicester we've seen more often than not this season. Kiernan Dewsbury-Hall ran the game. It was his best performance in quite a while. And ditto Steffi Mavididi. Ricardo Pereira started for the first time after getting injured. And I think this showed how much of a miss he's been during this slump in form for Leicester. It was just a great showing, and Leicester looked back to their best. Whether that's a corner turned, only time will tell, but We needed this, didn't we, Justin, to keep the automatic promotion race interesting, yeah. Because otherwise I was a bit fearful it may just be Ipswich and Leeds. So thankfully Leicester seem to have got back on track somewhat. Only time will tell, though, as I say. Norwich were a bit flat here, weren't they? One of the poorest performances we've seen from them in a long time. I suppose you have got to keep in mind they were playing Leicester, who have been out of form, but are still very strong. As far as Norwich's top six hopes are concerned, they weren't affected at all. As mentioned, all the teams chasing sixth place lost. So really, I suppose it was a bit of a decent Easter Monday from a Norwich perspective. It does add a bit of extra spice to next Saturday's East Anglian derby, though. Not only would a win strengthen their playoff bid, but they'd also greatly harm Ipswich's promotion chances. And the thing is, I'm genuinely not sure what Norwich fans would prefer. Playoffs, yeah, or Ipswich not getting promotion is quite a tough one to call without being a Norwich fan, Justin.
I think, yeah, maybe they would prefer the playoffs because Ipswich will still get, you know, they'll still have
I'm not sure.
Yeah, but Ipswich will still have a chance of getting promoted even if they drop out of the top two. So I think Norwich fans will want to get into the playoffs and hope to God that Norwich drop out of the top two race and then Ipswich and then Norwich do them in the playoffs. That'll be a thing. But if Norwich get 3 points against them, that'll strengthen their playoff position and damage Ipswich's championship title push, which will be a really, really nice feeling, I imagine, for Canaries fans.
Yeah, could only be the second of four East Anglian derbies if Norwich's ideal season pans out, really, couldn't it? Because you're right, there's a decent chance we will have Ipswich v Norwich in the playoffs still. But with regards to which would they prefer, I think some Norwich fans genuinely would prefer Ipswich miss out on promotion, yeah, as opposed to their own chances.
I'll make my point here. I want Norwich to win. Okay.
For God's sake.
Okay. Right. This isn't Ipswich scepticism, but I want Norwich to win because I don't want Ipswich to get promoted because I want more of this drama they provide from a viewing perspective. And as well as that, it means that we potentially get an Old Farm derby in the playoffs as well. This is what everybody wants. Everybody wants this. It's no disrespect.
I'm not sure that's what I want. I would like to see Ipswich get it over the line after the season they've had. But
you're a fool. You're a fool. Purely for the content, Ipswich are fantastic.
Maybe. But I think just because, obviously, the playoffs is such a lottery, some Norwich fans will be looking at that and going, I'd rather just Ipswich not getting promoted because they just know. People don't really realise how, you know, intertwined Norfolk and Suffolk are with the derby. So Norwich fans would not be hearing the end of it if Ipswich were to get promoted. So if they had the choice, I think a lot of Norwich fans would be choosing Ipswich not get promoted as opposed to them getting the playoffs, which is self-sabotage, but I genuinely think that's what a lot of people would choose. Justin, let's take a quick break. After that, we'll talk about Plymouth sacking Ian Foster and some of the other games in the relegation battle.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome back to the Second Tier podcast. So we'll talk about some of the games in the relegation battle, JP, and we'll kick things off with Plymouth. And they've sacked head coach Ian Foster. It's after suffering 8 defeats in 11 games, the latest being at home to Bristol City. In a statement, the club said Ian's coaching credentials really stood out when we made the appointment. We have given him as long as possible to see if results could improve. Unfortunately, this hasn't been the case. We feel now is the right time to make a change to give us the best chance of securing survival. Director of Football Neil Dusnip will take charge for the rest of the season. Justin, Foster sacking, it's not a surprise this has happened. The surprise is that it didn't happen sooner.
Yeah, it should have happened sooner. When we discussed his future in the international break, I think we were both right in saying that club made a mistake. Now's the time to do it, but they seem a bit of a nice club. They give him a 2-game stay of execution and boom, he's gone. It's quite impressive, really. But yeah, to not beat around the bush, Plymouth have become a terrible team. A really, really terrible team, which is staggering because they're a good side. They showed that for almost 2/3 of the season. And then Foster came in and it went tits. It went completely tits. And it's just staggering, really, the drop-off. And for me, it would have been really, really difficult to make this team not very good at attacking. But Foster achieved that. And it's quite staggering. It was a poor appointment. They needed a leader. They needed a big character with a clear footballing philosophy. And Foster offered none of that. I'm just looking at the stats from the game now. The 2 shots on target at home, it's just not good enough. It's a complete contrast and a drop-off from this side that was young and exciting and unpredictable, and now they're predictable, boring and just bland.
Yeah, well, they were also a pretty comfortable mid-table side when Ian Foster came in and didn't look like they had any chance of getting relegated, but unfortunately it's gone pretty much as badly as it possibly could. And that's why they are now one of the teams staring firmly down the barrel of relegation. I mean, when you've got your own fans chanting for the manager to be sacked, that should be a hint that now's the time to sack the manager. They should have done it during the international break, and I'm not really sure why they didn't, because they've cost themselves 2 games where they could have very easily got some precious, precious points in terms of staying up, and they've really shot themselves in the foot with that one. I mean, Plymouth are a very well-run club, and this whole saga doesn't really change my mind on that. I still think they are a very well-run club, but they haven't handled this situation very well. And you talk about, you know, what Ian Foster's done to this Plymouth team, Justin. They were the top scorers at home this season in the whole entire league. They've now failed to score in 5 home games, which is the first time that's happened in club history, as far as as I'm told. And that goes, I think that's a pretty good summary of what Ian Foster has done to this team. He's taken what was a really, really good opportunity for any manager to be in charge of a progressive club with excellent recruitment and taken them very firmly backwards. And they weren't going backwards before. They had really good momentum going in the right direction. And that's not happened at all under Ian Foster. And you'll do very well to find anyone who can defend him and said that he deserves a bit longer, because it's just not gone well at all. Well, they've given it to Neil Dusnip until the end of the season. He is the director of football, as I say. I'm not sure giving the job to the guy who appointed Ian Foster is the best move. Justin, what do you think?
Yeah, it's a bit risky. Look, I think Ian Foster's got very good coaching credentials, but I think bringing in someone who's inexperienced, who doesn't have, you know, a lot of club experience, that especially at championship level, I think is, you know, you're stepping on a few problems there. Yeah, at the same time, though, what market were Plymouth batting in? Can they afford to go for a different type of manager, or did they need to go for someone like Ian Foster, who may have been a little bit of more of a cheaper option? I don't know. So yeah, it is an interesting one that they've gone for the man who appointed Ian Foster. But at the same time, we've said it about John Worthington at Huddersfield. Sometimes it just helps. It's cliched, but sometimes it just helps that they know the club, they know the players. So maybe on this occasion, it might work out for him.
Well, Dusnip was in caretaker charge for 4 games after Stephen Schumacher left earlier in the season. He drew 3 and lost to Southampton. So I don't know. It's, I mean, when I saw the sacking happen, I was certain they pressed the button, Justin. I don't even need to mention which button I'm referring to there. This does seem a bit risky. It's got to be said. Doosnip, he does have a lot of experience with managing the England youth teams, but this is a big job. This is the biggest job that he's going to have in probably his whole coaching career, getting Plymouth to the safety line with six games remaining. Because right now it's looking very much like it may very well be two of them, Huddersfield and Sheffield Wednesday. We'll talk a bit more about that later in the show, Justin. But yeah, this is... I'm not sure whether I would have thought this was the good idea. I think a firefighter, even though it is a club like Plymouth who are... you know, so well run and such a progressive club, I think they may have to just take one on the chin here and just get a firefighter in. But, yeah, we'll see how Doosnip does, shall we? They have got Rotherham away on Friday, which is, I mean, that is such a huge game, isn't it? They have got to get 3 points there. Otherwise, yeah, it won't be looking very good from a Plymouth Argyle perspective. Probably the most eye-catching result of Easter Monday, Sunderland 1, Blackburn 5. It's Blackburn's first win under John Eustace, and what a way to get it, Justin.
Yeah, it's quite bonkers, really. The turning in away performance like that, I think, is fantastic. And I think it probably makes the relegation picture look a little bit more clearer. But it's just a reminder of the attacking quality that they've got in the team. That if Eustace can get the right blend, it can do some damage with this side. Because I think Yondal Thomason was vastly underachieving with the results that they were getting. I know they had a fair few injuries, but the dynamic of this team changes when players come back. Sam Gallagher looked a bit nice, you know, a really good folly. Ryan Hedges looks sharp again. Sammy Schmodix is Sammy Schmodix. And again, it's a reminder of Tyrese Dolan's on form. He's probably one of the most gifted technicians in the division. You know, the way his close control, his technique, his ability to get out of tight spaces, I think is fantastic, but we don't see it often enough. It was a really good all-round attacking display. And it was devastating at the very most. And to do it at the stadium alight as well, I just think is incredible.
Well, we said after the Ipswich game on Good Friday that if Blackburn play like that for the rest of the season, they'll stay up. And, I mean, I don't think many expected them to play this much better just a few days later, but they were outstanding and fair play to them. You are right. Unsurprisingly, Sammy Schmodix was at the heart of it, two goals and an assist. And I think Blackburn are increasingly aware that they'll do well to hold on to him this summer. But you're right to point out Ryan Hedges and Tyrese Dolan. They both had excellent games and they're quite an inconsistent pair. But when they're on it, they are two very good players. And I mean, you can't really fault any Blackburn player, to be honest. Everyone was just fantastic. Because John Eustace had failed to win so many games as Blackburn manager, it's quite easy to forget just how bad they were towards the end of the Yondal Thomason era. They couldn't defend. The goals had dried up. They were essentially in free fall. So when it's as bad as it was, it's understandable that it took a bit of time for Eustace to turn it around. But over time, he's done that, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. And that's the thing. He's rectified the problems. I think they've always had that attacking nous. It's just about choosing your moments. And they had to do that because they tightened up. They made themselves more difficult to beat. And that's going to be at the sacrifice of some of their attacking play. But they did that. And now, hopefully, I don't think... Look, they're not going to win 5-1 every game. But hopefully, we see a little bit more of that balance out of them because they've got a lot of really good players. And I think if Eustace can find the right blend, he can make this into a really good team because I think there was a hope at one stage, even from me, that Thomason was turning them into a playoff-chasing team. Maybe need a couple more additions in the summer, but you know, if Eustace can finish the season right, why can't that be the aspiration next season?
Yeah, well, they're not going to win every game 5-1. It is very much just a one-off. But what we can say for sure is that they're much harder to beat, aren't they? They've reduced the number of chances opposition teams are having greatly and are generally just playing a lot better. And these tend to be good ingredients for staying up. And while they have got a tough set of remaining games, they seem to be edging closer to staying up. And John Eustace deserves quite a bit of credit for that. One team who'll be thankful that they're not a few points worse off is Sunderland because... otherwise, they might be looking over their shoulder a bit, Justin, because they have been woeful recently, haven't they? They've now won just 4 points from an available 27. They did play well against Cardiff on Good Friday, to be fair. But, you know, it's quite incredible how shocking they've been since sacking Mick Beale. I'm not saying for a second that they were wrong to sack him, obviously. But they've managed to reach a new level of shocking since then, haven't they?
It's quite mad, really. Conceded 15 in 8 games, scored just 6 in that time. I know Jack Clark's been a huge miss, but not to this point. He can't defend. It's bad. And again, though, I spoke about leadership within the squad. It just isn't there for me. So I'm not surprised that this has been such a significant drop-off. And you go through 3 coaches in a season when you don't have the required leadership in the dressing room. They're just the ingredients of a team, not in free fall, but they're going to drop off.
I think they are in free fall, Justin, aren't they?
Yeah, it's quite hard to actually make an argument against that. Again, you know, a little bit like Blackburn, you know, there's a lot of quality in this team, and you know they should be doing a lot better. But I just think the squad, it just lacks experience, it lacks leaders, and I think that's got, you know, you've got to point the finger up to the hierarchy. Unfortunately, I think they've got so many things wrong this season, starting from the transfer window last summer.
Yeah, well, I mean, the second half of the season has been an unmitigated disaster for Sunderland, hasn't it? And it seems to be getting worse. When they appointed Jason Dodds as the manager until the end of the season. Mike Dodds, sorry. Who's Jason Dodds?
Jason Dodds is a Southampton fullback, an ex-Southampton fullback from like the early 2000s.
Sorry, dearie me. Mike Dodds. When they appointed Mike Dodds until the end of the season, I was still somewhat hopeful that they had an outside chance of getting the top 6 because he did a fairly decent job after Tony Mowbray was sacked. But yeah, it's not gone very well at all. And I mean it with no disrespect to Blackburn, but losing 5-1 at home is bad. But when it's a team like Blackburn who have been struggling so much recently, it's quite embarrassing. And it pretty much sums up their season. The only positive to take from it is 16-year-old Chris Rigg getting on the score sheets because he looks a really, really promising young lad. But that's it. That's the only positive you can take from this. And I think most were expecting them to use last season as a building block for this season. But that building block was apparently just made of sand because they've definitely gone backwards, haven't they? And Sunderland fans will be simply counting down the days until the season's over. But even then, where do they go next? Well, they've reportedly got an idea of what to do because Paul Heckingbottom is said to be top of their wanted list to be their next manager. The club apparently see him as someone who ticks all the right boxes. What do you think, Justin?
I like Heckingbottom. I think he deserves a chance, but I just don't think Sunderland's the right fit for him. And I don't think he's the right fit for Sunderland. I mean, firstly, this really important point that I made not too long ago. Paul Heckingbottom cannot work successfully outside of Yorkshire. That's a really important point.
It's a very good point.
They're always Hibs. He's been at Hibs. Where else has he been? Barnsley, Yorkshire. Clubs outside of Yorkshire do not get on with Paul Heckingbottom.
Sheffield United, obviously, as well.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't do great at Leeds, though, did he?
Yeah, but he also only got half a season. So it's quite hard to judge him. But look, for me, it's just not quite the right fit. Sheffield United tenure is a strange one because I think that squad, when they came down from the Premier League, were too good to not go back up at that point. And then they slowly got older and older. And that's why they're so bad in the Premier League this season. Sunderland should probably be looking elsewhere. They should be looking for a young, dynamic coach who isn't Mick Beale, who has had experience of managing to some varying degree of success. Because I do think it's a club with a lot of pull. I just don't think Paul Heckingbottom is probably the right choice here.
I don't know if I agree with you, Justin. I think you're being a bit harsh to Paul Heckingbottom. At the same time, I don't know if he is the right man to be Sunderland manager. He did a fantastic job in getting Sheffield United promoted last season. I think you are doing a bit of a disservice to him there because he didn't have a gigantic amount of backing, and considering the other teams who are chasing promotion, I think he actually did really well to get them automatically promoted as comfortably in the end as they did. And look, it's not really his fault that they were getting battered each week in the Premier League because they were woefully unprepared for the task at hand. Well, he is the manager, but that squad, I don't think fucking Pep Guardiola could have kept Sheffield United from being bottom of the division. I also feel like he perhaps doesn't get the recognition he deserves for the promotion because he's not a very fashionable manager because, you know, he's a 49-year-old bloke from Yorkshire who's not particularly charismatic, and he has Bottom in his surname. I think that does go against him. You laugh, Justin, but I do genuinely think that goes against him a bit. So, you know, that shouldn't count against him, but it does in the eyes of many people. And having said all that, and perhaps I'm contradicting myself a bit here, I'm just not sure he is the answer for Sunderland. I can't really give a definitive reason why. I just think maybe I was it's hoping for name. Someone.
It's because his name. That's what
it's
it is.
Because he's got Bottom in his surname. No, I think I was just hoping for someone, something a bit more ambitious, Justin.
Yeah, I think that's it. A little bit more ambitious, because Mick Beer wasn't ambitious and Paul Heckingbottom isn't ambitious either. If they're going for, let's say, a Will Still or
I think
Scandinavian...
the Will Still thing is really, you know...
It's skewed everything, hasn't it?
It has, hasn't it? It's really skewed our expectations of who Sunderland should get in next. So whoever they get in is going to be up against the fact that they're not Will Still.
Yeah, no, you are right. We are comparing far too often. But even reading up on some of the managers they were linked with from Scandinavia, Kim Hallberg, I think, was one, and his football philosophy seemed to marry up. I'm not going to go into detail on it now, but just reading about him, the coach's voice, and Opto, I really like the look of him. I don't really get that from Paul Heckingbottom. You know, I don't get that, ooh, yeah, sort of thing. You know, you know when you see what you want on a menu, you go, ooh, yeah, go on then. Mm. That's what you want when you see a manager link. With Paul Heckingbottom, I get okay, all right. It's that sort of reaction.
No, I think that's fair. I mean, when they got rid of Tony Mowbray, I was pretty certain they'd get a manager in from abroad. And now it looks like they may be going down the path of Mick Beale and Paul Heckingbottom. It just doesn't scream ambition, does it?
And Paul and Mick. Paul, Mick,
maybe
and Tony.
That is me being, you know, very talk sport about this whole thing and, you know, discrediting managers because they're not called Paul Heckingbottom Weola or whatever.
Paolo Heckingbottom.
Paolo Heckingbottom, yes. I just don't know. I'm incredibly interested to see who they do go for in the summer. Judging from the reaction from Sunderland fans, a lot of them don't seem very inspired by Paul Heckingbottom either. And let's go to Rotherham. They got their first win in 2024 and only their fourth victory of the season. It's after beating Millwall 2-1. It means Rotherham won't be breaking their own record for the fewest points won in a championship season of 23. They would have been officially relegated if they lost this game, actually, although that does seem to be delaying the inevitable, whatever the case. Why are you laughing, Justin?
Because it's back on. They're coming out. They're coming.
Okay.
Off from the survival train's rolling down.
The great escape. The greatest escape is on.
The greatest of escapes is coming.
Yeah. Well, it's an awful result for Millwall, isn't it? Let's be serious with that. After a good start under Neil Harris, it is now just one win from five. 4 points above the relegation zone. What are you thinking of them, Justin?
I'm not too worried. They're a difficult team to beat. They've had a rough run of games. Obviously, this Rotherham one's an ugly one. But if their team's going to play as similar to a Neil Harris team, it's going to be this Rotherham side. So therefore, it's probably the worst game they could have hoped for, to be honest with you. And again, just looking at the recent results, they drew with West Brom, lost to Leeds. It's not a bad run of games by any means. And I think out of those teams in there, I would back, you know, Birmingham, Plymouth, Huddersfield, Sheffield Wednesday. I would back Millwall out of those teams because they just know how to defend, they know how to make things ugly, and they'll do whatever it takes to win. I don't think those teams have those types of minerals just yet, because it's Millwall, and Neil Harris is putting in that Millwall attitude, and I think it's a positive thing. It's just Rotherham, isn't it? You lose to Rotherham, it's going to feel rough, because at that point, when you do lose to them, they're the worst team ever to exist in a championship. But unfortunately, it just wasn't to be. But as I say, I think it's the style of play thing. I think that's what did them. Rotherham play a similar way to Millwall, it's going to be difficult.
Well, I think my issue with Neil Harris is that he was a short-term fix, wasn't he? He would be good for that, you know, new manager bounce and all that, give the players a kick up the arse, that kind of thing. But I think that only gets you so far. In terms of tactical awareness, he's definitely got to be one of the most limited managers in the league. And now it looks like we might be at a stage where Millwall need a bit more than a club legend telling them to do better, because that's all I think Neil Harris particularly offers, really. I mean, they're still in a decent position, and there are certainly clubs I'm more worried about going down, but it is still a bit of a tenuous situation. It has got to be said, though, considering if you compare their squad to the likes of Plymouth, Huddersfield, Sheffield Wednesday, Millwall's squad is substantially better than those three that I've just mentioned there. So if you're looking at pure quality of the squad, they should stay up. I just remain pretty unconvinced about Neil Harris being the medium to long-term answer. Short-term, fine. But we are now getting to the stage where we're past short-term and we're starting to see the shortfalls of bringing him in. The only other thing I've got noted on this game, Justin, is when did Rotherham sign Charlie Wyke? He scored the winner here and it really caught me by surprise. That move completely passed me by.
I'm pretty sure it's a deadline day signing, but he's obviously not done a lot since he went there. Yeah, it was a bit of a random one because obviously it's on the books at Wigan in League One, but you know he's a Liam Richardson guy, isn't he? That's what it is. But he's
a very Liam Richardson guy.
Clearly not worked out.
No. It just when I saw his name pop up on a Soccer Saturday when I was watching all the games, I was like, oh. Charlie Wyke, what? Really confused me. But there you go. Final game we'll talk about, Justin. Stoke 1, Huddersfield 1. A big game in the relegation battle, but these two couldn't be separated on Monday afternoon. A better showing from Huddersfield. We were saying in Saturday's show how it was a bit of a worry how poorly they were playing. This was an improvement. A well-taken goal by Bojan Radulovic. This was his first goal since signing in January. They could really do with him doing that a lot more often because they have been a bit toothless going forwards, it's got to be said. Justin, let's look at the relegation battle. I'm not ruling anyone else out here, but would you say it's looking increasingly likely that it's going to be two of Huddersfield, Plymouth and Sheffield Wednesday joining Rotherham in League One next season?
Joining Rotherham?
Yeah.
Oh, so...
Don't start giving me that bollocks about the threat escape. Can we be serious here for a sec?
I'm just going to point out, Plymouth, Huddersfield, Sheffield Wednesday cannot buy wins at the moment. And if Rotherham... do the inconceivable.
He is joking, ladies and gentlemen.
And win six games in a row.
Justin Peach has a habit of saying these things and sounding deadly serious, but he is joking. Justin, two of Huddersfield, Plymouth and Sheffield Wednesday, what are you saying?
Okay, providing that we're counting Rotherham out, I think it's foolish, but providing we are. I'm going to go with Sheffield Wednesday. I mean, Danny Raw was seething after the game. I think that sort of... attitude coming out of a game.
I'm not necessarily looking for who you think is going down. I'm just saying, do you think it will be two of Huddersfield, Plymouth and Sheffield Wednesday?
No, and I'm saying Sheffield Wednesday were one of the two. It's very hard to see them coming out of it. But with Huddersfield and Plymouth, I think it's so hard to call between those because it's literally going to be a case of, you know, can Neil Dewship come out of this and generate a run of form? Is he going to do that? Is he going to pick up from the rubble that Ian Foster's left behind? Can Andre Breitenreiter actually get his Huddersfield team clicking? Because obviously the goal that Bojan Radulovic scored was fantastic, but they didn't see the game out. And that's been a case quite often this season where they cannot see games out. Cost Darren Moore his job. You know, that's a thing with Huddersfield this season. It's not just a new manager thing or an old manager thing. It's clearly just a thing for them this season. They cannot manage the games very well. I think it's so hard to call. If I was to make a split judgment as to who's more likely, I would argue Huddersfield over Plymouth, but at the same time, Plymouth can't score goals. And that's a bad thing in football. I think it's so hard to call.
So you're saying two of those three?
Yeah. It's whoever's going to be bluntest. Who's got the bluntest instrument here? Is it Huddersfield? Is it Plymouth? And Sheffield Wednesday?
Yeah. Well, we're getting to that stage where a 5-point gap for someone like Stoke, for example, is actually quite big with six games remaining, particularly when the three teams who we're talking about here are just so out of form. I mean, Birmingham are well amongst it points-wise, but they got a great win against Preston, which could be the start of them climbing away. Millwall's form has dipped recently, which is a concern, but, you know, Huddersfield and Plymouth are so appallingly out of form. Well, Sheffield Wednesday have been down there for so long and also struggling for form now that you would say these three are the main contenders at this stage with, you know, Millwall, Birmingham, possibly a couple of others as kind of edging contenders, for the lack of a better term. But, you know, quite a bit can change in six games, but that's certainly how it's looking right now. I mean, it would have been absolutely hilarious if Plymouth got Neil Warnock in and he relegated Huddersfield. I've got to say that for sure, but that doesn't look like it's going to happen now. But yeah, it's going to be a tight one, this relegation battle. I think it's going to go right down to the wire, but now we are getting to the period where the six games remaining, we are starting, I think, to see teams being kind of eliminated from the equation. And while there are, you know, plenty of teams who still haven't been completely ruled out. We are getting to that period where, you know, it is starting to thin out this relegation battle, and it will take Huddersfield and Plymouth having quite a big pickup by their current standards to actually make things more interesting than it looks like it may be getting to. But there we go, ladies and gentlemen. That's been the Second Tier Podcast. We'll be back again on Friday with the previous show brought to you by SBK. And we bloody look forward to seeing you then. I've been Ryan Dilks.
I have been Justin Peach.
He got so emotional ending the episode there, ladies and gentlemen. And a big thank you for listening.
Second Tier is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.